The Fearless Podcast, in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. This is episode 48. And today I'm really excited to introduce y'all to Dr. Anthony Chafee. Dr. Chafee, welcome to the Fearless Podcast.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me.
So, Dr. Chafee, for those of that don't know who you are, maybe you could give us a little bit of an intro, some of your background.
Sure. Well, I'm an American medical doctor and physician. I work currently in Australia in neurosurgery, and I have a practice in metabolic medicine. Some call it functional medicine. It's really preventative medicine and looking at root causes of chronic disease. You know, traditionally we have a very, very good understanding and ability to treat acute injuries, issues, medical emergencies, traumas, these sorts of things. But the current system is really not adept at dealing with chronic diseases. And it's just papering over symptoms as opposed to addressing root cause issues. And so that's what I try to do with more diet and lifestyle sort of interventions to try to address root cause issues. And as a result, you know, you're getting people off medication as opposed to on them and just getting them to be healthy and not have to use doctor services in the first place, which is the whole idea. You keep people healthy. You don't just perpetuate their illness. And that's sort of the system now, is that we're perpetuating illness and just treating the symptoms. We're not treating root cause diseases, root cause of the disease. And so therefore you can just keep selling them medicine. They'll have to take medicine for the rest of their life. They're much shorter and more miserable life, but that doesn't matter because it makes a lot of people a lot of money. And so I obviously think that we need to shift out of that. Most doctors don't even realize that we're in that. They don't realize that there's another option. And so what I do now in my podcast and social media is I try to educate people and doctors alike to understand that there's actual treatments for these so-called uncurable diseases, you can actually reverse type 2 diabetes. You can reverse Crohn's disease. You can reverse multiple sclerosis and rheumatoid arthritis with very simple interventions of a dietary nature and lifestyle. And so that's what I try to do. I've spent about 25 years researching diet and nutrition, how that affects health and chronic disease as it pertains to our health as patients and treating patients as doctors, as well as in athletes. And so that was my original interest in this, was from the biological point of view, but also because I was an athlete and I wanted to give my body the best sort of nutrition that I could. And so now I'm just trying to share that with other people and get people healthy without having to resort to a lot of medications just to keep them hanging on and never getting true resolution of their symptoms and issues.
Yeah, and that's a little bit of my story. Is what led me to the carnivore diet is I had an unknown arthritic condition in my left shoulder, and it degenerated the joint and the labrum, and they wanted to replace my shoulder, but instead I started carnivore, and it's kind of it's helped tremendously. It's taken away the pain and everything. I'm still missing 30 to 40% of my labrum, but and maybe we can get into that a little bit later, because I've heard you mention some things that I wanted to drill down on. But this is the reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast, is to discuss the controlled demolition of the agro-industrial complex. And you were just mentioning earlier, as we were talking before we started recording, about this Blue Zone scam. And this really speaks to the larger issue with the government involvement and how the government is basically redirecting all these things. And then you tie that in with the climate change deal. And, you know, maybe we could talk about what we were just talking about with these Blue Zone scams and Lo Melinda, the Seventh-day Adventist, Kellogg's. I know you've talked a lot about, and I realize that's a lot of different topics, but it speaks to the larger topic of how we're being propagandized regarding our food.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we are. I mean, we've been lied to, I mean, about how many things. It's impossible to know, but we, all these things keep coming out more and more about all the different things we get lied to about. The Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA, published in 2016 actual internal memos from the sugar companies called the Sugar Research Foundation, detailing how they paid off various professors and researchers from Harvard and elsewhere to falsify data and publish fraudulent studies to make it appear as if cholesterol caused heart disease when it was much more likely to be sugar, because there were a lot of people advocating that it was sugar. And so they, like the tobacco companies, they wanted to put out the propaganda to combat that, just to protect their now multi-trillion-dollar a year product. And one of those professors was named head of the USDA, and he was the one who authored and published the USDA declaration in the late 70s saying that cholesterol caused heart disease, saturated fat increased cholesterol, everyone needs to stop eating this. And as a result of that, people did. They shifted over to eat a more plant-based diet. We stopped eating as much meat. We're eating. We certainly reduced red meat significantly. So everyone who vilifies red meat is just fooling themselves, because we dropped our red meat consumption by over one third since the 1970s. And things have gotten worse markedly. And you can look at that by almost every single metric. Things have gotten worse from our health, from a expenditure point of view, from a lives lost point of view, from lost productivity point of view, and just a pure, black and white cost accounting of the situation. Even Harvard School of Public Health, they published a study looking at just five of these non-communicable chronic diseases. So heart disease, or cardiovascular disease, diabetes, COPD, mental health issues, and what was the other one? What was the other one? I already said diabetes. So the hell was that? Anyway, so there's five of those. I'm just blanking on the last one. But they looked at these and they said, and they found that the amount that we're spending on these from direct and indirect costs in 2010 to 2030 will nearly double in the amount of spending that we're going to have to do just for treating these sorts of issues. And it's going to be upwards of $13 trillion a year that we'll be spending worldwide just on those five disorders. And but that doesn't take into account the lost opportunity costs. So people have sick days, they're not working, there's loss of productivity, and people going on disability, all these other sorts of factors that go into it. And we would have lost about $46 trillion between 2011 and 2030 just on the lost opportunity costs. And then the other factor, the other way they looked at it, was in premature deaths, so lives lost, dying early, and how what that costs countries and systems in the economy was estimated by Harvard to be nearly $23 trillion in 2010, and is estimated to be over $42 trillion by 2030. So per year, worldwide. So $13 trillion a year in just direct and indirect spending, then $42+ trillion a year in lives lost, and then all the trillions of dollars in opportunity costs. I mean, we're talking, what, $55, $60 trillion a year that we're going to be destroying out of the economy or shoveling somewhere else. I mean, there's some of these industries are obviously profiting from that. Some of that $13 trillion goes into that. The rest of it is just loss. That's just loss to society and to the world. So that's a very losing equation. So since we made these changes, I mean, you can say what you want about red meat, but you can't say that. You can't say that more red meat makes things worse, because we're eating less than, we've reduced red meat by over a third since the 1970s. And just from 2010 to 30, I mean, these costs are doubling, right? So it's not red meat. And we've increased fruits and vegetables, increased grains, increased seed oils, increased sugar in the form of high fructose corn syrup, especially in America, but around the world. And these diseases are just getting worse and worse and worse. And so we have been lied to. We've been flat out lied to. We've been told that it was one thing. It was definitely not that. We have hard documentation showing that the sugar companies basically made this up and then paid people off to run with it. And then you have further sort of machinations of different sorts of industries, such as the food and drug companies. There's a gentleman named Callie Means, who's a whistleblower, He worked in the food and drug companies, and he's saying that, hey, these guys know that this food, these processed food, is making people sick, and they're profiting off of it on the back end because they're selling medications to, you know, treat these metabolic diseases. He said, I know they know this because I was in the board meetings with them when they said it. So he's been making a lot of rounds showing that these guys know what they're doing. This isn't a mistake. And they obviously have a very big vested interest in keeping these industries going. The food companies, like the big processed food companies like Coca-Cola, Nestle, Pepsi, they spend the vast majority of money on nutritional research than anybody else. So I think Coca-Cola spends about 11 times the amount of money on nutritional research than the NIH, right? So it's the vast majority of nutritional research goes into this, and they're all pushing this plant-based narrative because they know that when people go plant-based and they stop eating meat, they don't go eating fresh quinoa salads with, you know, sprouts and arugula. You know, they might start like that, but they go very quickly is eating a whole bunch of processed crap and potato chips. And so that's what's going to make them money. And then that's going to make the pharmaceutical companies money on the back end as well. And so, you know, they're happy to perpetuate this system, even though it means the suffering for a lot of people. And it goes even further back than that. But I mean, that's enough to drive a lot of harm.
Yeah, and that's what's interesting about the consolidation of all these transnational companies. You know, even with beef processing just on the meat side, but all of these companies can, over the last 30 or 40 years, they can continue to consolidate, and it makes these connections between big processed food, sugar, and big pharma, it basically ties them all together, and they basically feed each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they're all sort of tied up together. You know, they as far as I understand, a lot of them are invested in each other. Like the pharmaceutical companies will have investments in processed food and vice versa. And it's just one step further to have them, you know, get involved in the manufacture of each other. But it's, you know, it's one thing for, you know, food companies to want to sell their product, whatever, you know, and it's one thing for pharmaceutical companies to want to make a profit. I have no problem with them doing that. It's just that we need to understand that what they're trying to do is a product development program, right? So they want to have a product that's they can sell perpetually year after year, you know. And so Goldman Sachs had a slide from one of their meetings that got leaked, and it said, you know, something to the extent of, you know, is curing people of disease, is that a viable business model? You know, so of course the answer to that is no, it's not, because once you cure something, then it's gone. And people say, well, what are you talking about? You know, cured smallpox, you cured polio. Like, you know how long ago that was? Like, we haven't cured a damn thing since then. Now it's just perpetuating it. Now it's just perpetuating these disease states so you can live with it. You know, Chris Rock had a whole big bit on this in the 90s in one of his stand-up specials. He said all of this stuff back in the 90s. And he just called it all out just perfectly. He said, you know, they're not going to cure a damn thing. You know, it's like, you know, buying a Cadillac that's bumper doesn't fall off. You mean, they have a metal that can, like, you know, orbit the moon and, like, go past Jupiter. Like, you know, they can make a damn, you know, Chevy that doesn't fall apart, you know, but they want it to fall apart. So you have to pay to fix it and you have to buy a new one. And so that's the thing. They want money on the return. You just have something that works like a body or a car. You never need to get it fixed. You never need to pay for it. And so that's what he was saying. He said, they're not going to try to cure anything anymore. They're just going to try to make it you able to live with it. And he's right. That's their business model. And fine, you know, that's their incentive. We just need to understand that as consumers, that that's what they're trying to do. They're going to be really good at making things that allow us to live a long time with something so we can keep buying something, or, you know, some things you need a one-off every now and then. But what they're not going to do is try to find the cures for anything. And so we just don't look to them for that. We don't wait for a pill to come out. We look at ourselves. Okay, so, you know, independent research have to look at this. Independent doctors have to look at this. Patients have to look at this and say, okay, how do I get myself better? I can take the drugs and that can help me for a time. But if I want to get well, I have to figure out what's making me sick. And because all these diseases are getting worse, they're not getting better. And it's not an infection that's sweeping the nation or sweeping across the world. These are non-communicable chronic diseases. Non-communicable mean they cannot pass from one person to another. And they are not solely genetic because they're getting worse. They're getting more prevalent. More people are getting these things. More people are getting them younger. More people are dying from these things as we go. We've never been more technologically advanced in history that we know of before now. And so why are we getting worse? Why are we getting sicker? Why are we dying younger in a lot of cases from these diseases? Some of these things used to never get seen in the younger decades, or certainly not in childhood, you know, like type 2 diabetes that used to be called adult onset diabetes, and fatty liver disease was only seen in alcoholics. And so, you know, then in the 1990s, a bunch of 10-year-olds were getting adult onset diabetes and fatty liver disease. And I remember the news reports when it happened when I was a kid, they were saying like, well, how the hell is this? This guy's 10 years old. How can he get adult onset diabetes? He's not an adult. And he's got fatty liver disease, but only alcoholics get fatty liver disease. And he's never had a drink in his life. He's 10. You know, so what is it? And so instead of thinking, well, what changed in our environment? Because that's the only thing that's going to change. They just said, you know, it's probably always happening. We just didn't notice it. And they just completely ignored it. And they renamed it type 2 diabetes and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Complete cop-out. And so you can say that once. You get one of those. Where you just say, well, we probably just weren't noticing it. You know, autism, 1 in 10,000 kids in America had autism in the 1970s. Now it's 1 in 34. And I believe 1 in 22 males, right? So it was, oh, we just didn't notice that. Well, they said that in the 90s. And then it increased in the 2000s. And then the 2010s. And now the 2020s. Dramatically. So you get to say that once. But then after that, you're just being lazy. You know, because, okay, well, we didn't notice it before. Well, now we're paying attention. Okay. And so if it's going up decade after decade, year after year, well, obviously there's something causing that. So that's something in our environment. Our genetics aren't changing during the course of our lifetime. The population genetics can't change as a population in one generation. That's not how population genetics work. If you have a number of genes in a population, unless there's some sort of mass extinction or mass migration or something like that, you will not change the percentage of those alleles, those genes in the population. You can't, no matter how long it goes, no matter how large the population grows or shrinks due to natural sort of processes, the unless there's a mass extinction or a mass migration event, you will not have a difference in the percentage of those alleles. And so that's what we need to remember. And so it's not going to, certainly not going to happen, change in like a generation or two in any case. So this is obviously something in our environment. And so if it's something in our environment, it's something that we can find and remove from our environment. And I think that that's what we sort of figured out with the carnivore diet. It's like, okay, well, you know, biologically, we've been eating a meat diet since for millions of years. We've been apex predators for at least 2 million years. We've only been eating these plants that we've been eating for about 10,000 years. And that's only certain populations. Native Americans, Native Australians, they've only been doing this for about 100, 150 years, right? So they've had no time at all to adapt. So Europeans and other people that have had agriculture longer, they still get sick. It just takes longer. Whereas Native Americans have a far higher rate of these non-communicable chronic diseases, these NCDs, than the rest of America. Same with Australian Aboriginals. They have a far higher rate of non-communicable chronic diseases. In fact, when I first came to Australia to practice medicine, I was told day one, if you get an Aboriginal patient that whatever their age says on their sheet, you just add 20 years to that because they just age so much more quickly. They just get diseases so much faster than anybody else. And so if you have someone in their 30s, you have to consider them as a geriatric patient because they just get these diseases faster. They get cancers faster. They get diabetes faster. They get heart disease faster. They get autoimmunity faster. So it is something that's affecting us in our environment. And I think it's very clearly largely to do with what we're eating. And then what happens? You have a cause that's causing an effect. If you remove that cause, the effect should go away. Okay, so let's run that experiment. You have someone with autoimmunity, you have someone with diabetes, just start eating meat. It's a, you know, complete elimination diet. Maybe there's a few things in there that are making things worse than others, but just clear the slate. Just eat meat. What happens? Autoimmunity goes away, antibodies go down, diabetes goes away, all these other diseases go away, all these issues go away, people's, you know, weight improves, all these other sorts of things. I see that every day in my medical practice. And I get people off medication. I rarely put people on medications. I'm generally getting them off medications. And it's that the proof of the pudding is in the eating, right? So let's just try it. See what happens. Okay, well, we try to see what happens, and then that's what we're seeing. So I have hundreds of patients to speak from. I know dozens of other doctors that are doing the exact same thing, and they're having exact same results with their patients. And there are large clinical trials showing the efficacy of this. And in fact, ketogenic diets have been shown in thousands of studies to be extremely beneficial in a number of different medical issues. And the ketogenic diet is an animal-based diet, because when you get rid of carbohydrates, you have to replace it with fat and protein. Well, where does that come from? It comes from meat. It's almost impossible to do that in a plant-based diet. And so they don't. All these studies do this with an animal-based ketogenic diet. And so that's what a carnivore diet is. And so, you know, if you can extrapolate from all these ketogenic studies what should happen with a ketogenic carnivore diet as well. And we're just seeing benefits time after time.
What's fascinating to me is when we encourage people to try carnivore, say, just do it for 2 weeks, because for myself, for my wife, for my family, for our friends that have tried it, for all the testimonials I've ever listened to online, within the first 2 weeks, you have a huge net positive benefit. And you just have all of these. For me, we went through a lot of different dietary phases, and we always tried to eat clean. We tried to eat organic. My wife had thyroid issues. My one son had gluten issues. So we went gluten free, and we were pretty plant-based there for a while. Actually, when I started having my shoulder problem, there's a very good case for myself that by reducing the meat in our diet helped exacerbate my shoulder issue, maybe even created it in a sense, because it just couldn't heal and repair. But as soon as you implement a carnivore diet and just stay consistent for a couple of weeks, the results are astounding. And that's what it's a type of diet that it reinforces itself, because when you deviate from it, you feel terrible. And that's what was so fascinating to me. Here we are, we're eating clean, we're organic, we're gluten-free, and we're doing all these talking points about what's supposed to be good and healthy. And I'm like, how come I feel so not good? I don't feel good. I feel old. I feel tired. I have these ailments. You know, they're telling me I have a shoulder of an 80-year-old, and this doesn't make sense, because we're really serious about eating right. You know, we don't eat out. We don't eat fast food. We don't eat any highly processed foods. We don't eat. But when you're in these plant-based, vegetarian-based, you're still getting like saturated with seed oils. And I think seed oils are a major factor to all this death and disease, because it's such a new food, if you want to call it a food. It's this new food that's literally been injected into our food system. There's no long-term studies, there's no long-term trials, and we're watching the manifestation of this poisoning. It's what James Evan Pilato calls the food world order, and it's what Catherine Austin Fitz calls the slow kill, how they've been manipulating our food system to make it addictive so that we eat more of it. And simultaneously, what we are eating is literally poisoning us. And the amazing part of it is they figured out a way to do it in such a slow way. Is the intention is they don't want to completely kill us. They want to keep us alive so that we are this perpetual consumer of the processed foods and the big pharmacological, you know, whatever pill to offset whatever side effects we have.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, you know, like any good drug dealer, you need to keep your customers alive, you know, so you don't want them to get overdosed and things like that, or else they can't keep buying drugs from you. But you need that comeback. You need that return. You know, that's why you can't just be like, okay, here's some meth but it's great. You're high for the rest of your life. You don't have any problems. You never need more drugs. Well, that's obviously a horrible idea. That's an anathema to that business. And that's the same thing with treating, actually resolving diseases. So you want that return, that return customer. You know, as far as the seed oils are concerned, there's a direct correlation with the consumption of seed oils and the rise of heart disease and chronic disease across America and the world, and in different countries similarly. Dr. Zoe Harcum and Dr. I'm blanking everybody's name today. I can't remember his name. Anyway, Dr. Harcum on her website, you know, they looked at the WHO information, their data for 192 countries, and they looked at saturated fat intake and cholesterol. I think it's cholesterol and heart disease, and they found that there was actually a direct correlation with 192 countries. They all showed a correlation with improved cardiovascular disease rates with higher cholesterol and more saturated fat and things like that. So those correlations don't actually run in the right way for that to be true. There is a randomized controlled trial, actually a couple of randomized controlled trials. I think there's about five randomized controlled trials where they replace saturated fat with plant oils like margarines and things like that, right? And then they gave them to people and see what happened. Three of them show that doesn't actually improve things. It actually doesn't improve people's risk of developing heart disease by lowering their cholesterol with plant oils, right? And removing saturated fat. So, okay. So that doesn't really help their case. And then the other two actually showed harm. They actually caused harm. The best one that they did had nearly 10,000 patients. It was like 9,600 people involved. They were actually institutionalized, so they were stuck in governments, under the care of the government for a number of years, and they could perfectly control their diet, or as well as you can. You know, when you send people home and say, hey, just eat this, you know, they may or they may not. But when you're providing every meal for years, you know, that's a much more controlled event. So the one diet, they were just eating sort of a traditional diet that they did in the 70s. And the other one, they sort of replaced out butter with lard with margarine and those sorts of things. And what happened? So they followed them for a number of years, and they found that, yes, indeed, if you replaced saturated fat with margarine, you'd lower total cholesterol and you'd lower LDL, and more people would die of heart attacks and strokes. So that's not good. But where was that in the 1970s when everyone was vilifying meat and fat and saying margarine was so good for you? They buried it. It took 40 years to uncover this data. And it was Dr. Ramson over at the NIH who actually uncovered this and subsequently published it. But that should never have been buried. That was one of these known paid shills from the sugar companies, Ansel Keys, who's an absolute criminal and crook. And everything that the guy's ever done should just be burned from the record book. He's just, everything that guy's done is poisoned. We have no idea when he started becoming corrupt. And obviously he had to have some sort of success in his research career to have some credibility to then sell and leverage. But who knows when that started. And so you just have to throw out everything that guy's done. And just wipe him from the history books. You know, that guy just should never, I mean, no, you don't, you need to know that villains existed, but you take away all the credits that guy's ever received. So now we know about this. If we'd known about this then, that we should never have put forward these recommendations because they know they cause harm. They're saying, when I was growing up, that was it. You were supposed to eat margarine. You're supposed to eat seed oils. You weren't supposed to have butter. It was bad for you. But they knew that it wasn't. They knew that this was actually killing people by replacing butter with margarine and getting rid of fat and replacing it with sugar. They knew this. And yet they did that because, you know, that's just their financial incentive. It's truly sick. So, you know, the only randomized controlled trials we have on the subject, replacing saturated fat with polyunsaturated fats and vegetable oils, they're unsaturated fats in meat as well, but the plant oils and fats there, those have either shown no benefit or harm. And then there's this direct correlation with increase in these diseases, and correlation isn't causation, but that randomized controlled trial that can show causation. That's the only type of experiment that can show causation. And so when you're changing out that one variable, you replace animal fat with plant fat, and more people die when you do that. That shows a cause and effect relationship.
Yeah, and maybe we could talk about we were talking about earlier with the blue zones, you know, Kellogg's, Loma Linda, and that correlation there with the food pyramid and why we should eat breakfast cereals and all these different things, because it's the same exact kind of pea mining or, well, what it is it's monetary funding to create propaganda to promote a certain market segment, like in the case of the cereal industry. And that, and, you know, I'm 47. We're probably similar in age. We're that same generation where, like, all of a sudden you need to eat breakfast cereals, you know, and now you go into a grocery store and there's aisles of this processed breakfast cereal. And then this year they came out and said that, like, Lucky Charms is better for you than steak, you know, it's like, but that's all part of this very long propaganda campaign that started a very long time ago. And it leads to this whole technocratic oligarchy that's kind of controlling everything because it's this scientism. Well, you know, Loma Linda says this and all of these studies say this. So that's why everybody should do this. So that's how we get the grant to fund, you know, it's basically a money. It's basically a propaganda payola wheel is what it is.
Yeah, well, it's just part of their marketing budget, isn't it? You know, they just spend millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars making studies that push their product, right? And so, oh, it's a study. Oh, there's a study. I'm like, who cares? I mean, there's studies that say all sorts of nonsense. That doesn't matter. Just because it's published somewhere, it doesn't matter. It's really important who published it. There's a guy named Dr. Richard Horton from The Lancet, one of the top medical journals in the world. And he said that the majority of medical studies in The Lancet and these top journals are completely fraudulent and just false. And, you know, the rest of them have to be very suspect as well. And that's because of just all these, you know, these, you know, corporate ties and flagrant conflicts of interest, manipulating data sets, manipulating sample sizes to get to the outcome that they want. Maybe running a study, and they did this a few years ago. It was caught, and I think New England Journal of Medicine. There's a study published there where they had a study that was published, and they said, "Ooh, look how good this is!" But when people actually dug in, they found that the study actually ran longer than that and ended up having very bad outcomes that didn't look very good to the powers that be that wanted that study published. And so they retroactively reset the endpoints that they were going to go, oh, well, this is where we looked at it and this is where we stopped the study and it showed really good things. Yeah, but you actually ran the study longer and it showed very bad things. And so that's complete fraud. That is absolute fraud. And when you're talking about things that can affect people's health and potentially hurt them or kill them, I think that's criminal. That is a criminal offense. It's malice aforethought. You're putting out something, you're putting out a product that you know will cause harm or is likely to cause harm. And then it causes harm. And you are responsible for those deaths 100%, legally, morally, and ethically. 100% you are responsible for those deaths and should be called to justice for that. This was echoed by the editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine and many other people. She said the same thing, that you just can't trust studies anymore. You can't trust the medical guidelines anymore. You can't trust these trusted bodies, these authoritative bodies. You just can't trust them. They're completely corrupted. We saw that in 2015 with the WHO saying that red meat was a likely carcinogen, and processed meat was definitely a carcinogen, a known carcinogen. Well, first of all, if meat is not a carcinogen and processed meat is a carcinogen, what does that mean? That means it's not the problem with the meat. It's something you did to it in that process. You added something to it. You added spices, seasonings, chemicals. So those plants and those chemicals are what are carcinogenic, if anything. But the fact of the matter is that is not what the data showed. There's a gentleman who was on that board for the WHO, and it's not all villains that work at the WHO and CDC. There are real scientists and doctors and researchers there, and this was one of them. And so he said that being on that panel was the most difficult thing he's ever gone through in his professional career, because he said that they threw out hundreds of high quality studies that showed absolutely no relationship between processed meat or unprocessed meat with cancer or any other deleterious health effect. And they threw those out in favor of extremely poor quality studies with extremely tenuous connections between what they called meat and colon cancer. And it was only like an 18% increased risk. When you're looking at epidemiological studies, it's background noise unless it's over 200%. So, and they know that, but the public doesn't know that. And so when you just push this out, it's just like Hitler said, you repeat the lie, you say it over and over again until people just start believing it, and they believe that it's true. Because, oh, well, everyone knows this. Okay, well, where's the evidence for that? There isn't any. So that those studies, they would call things that had in meat that were used as an ingredient in food, they would call the whole thing meat, right? Mm-hmm. So fast food was meat. Pizza was meat, right? Because sometimes the toppings are meat. And fast food was meat because you might have a burger patty, ignoring the bun, ignoring the fries, deep fried in seed oils and the sugary drink or the artificially sweetened drink. All of that is meat. All of that counts as meat, right? And lasagna, sandwiches. I mean, like this is the kind of things that people do. It's any sandwich. Apparently that's meat now, because it may have meat in it. And that's something that, Professor Willett from Harvard was doing, that he did his study that said, oh, diabetes, red meat causes diabetes or is associated with diabetes, because you can't say cause, because he didn't do a cause and effect experimental relationship, because he just does epidemiology so that he can manipulate the data and show whatever the hell he wants. And so he was calling pizza, lasagna, and sandwiches meat. And look, meat causes diabetes. No, that's not meat, buddy. And you know that. And in fact, there are experimental studies looking at ketogenic diet, meat-based ketogenic diets, reversing type 2 diabetes in large clinical studies out of Virta Health in the US. And I do this all the time in my patient population. I have never seen a case of type 2 diabetes not just reverse completely when you go on a meat only diet. So meat's not causing diabetes if a meat only diet is reversing it. So, it's pretty wild that they said this. But the University of Washington in Seattle actually published 2 years ago a massive paper where they looked at over 800 studies on the subject of meat and red meat and cancer. And they found that the ones that had a tenuous connection were, in their words, junk studies and lazy science. And they found that the better quality ones found absolutely no connection between meat and cancer, especially even processed meat and cancer. but especially not with red meat and cancer. So, you know, this is just a fraud. And so that gentleman who was on that board at the WHO, he said that was very difficult watching that happen. And he said that they were all vegans, vegetarians, and Seventh-day Adventist church members. If for people that don't know, the Seventh-day Adventist church has held since the 1800s that meat is sinful. It causes lustful feelings and therefore is a sin. And God, you know, gave us a directive through their prophetess, Ellen G. White, who said that, you know, God said, that she had a vision from God that said, we have to stop eating meat. Everyone needs to stop eating meat because it's sinful and causes lustful feelings and makes people masturbate. Look it up. This is just historical fact. Yeah. Sounds crazy, but you know, there's way more crazy. You know, that's what they say, it's stranger than fiction. Now, real life is just bizarre, the things that people do. But that's what it was, and that's a historical fact. So he was saying, it's like, look, you guys are vegans, vegetarians, and Seventh-day Adventists. You need to declare your biases. This is biased, and you need to declare that and let people know where you're coming from. And they refused. So people don't know that. They don't know that this is how these things were brought about. And so that's why you can't trust these things. You don't know who's on it. They're not necessarily doctors, scientists, and researchers. And if they are, they could be completely corrupt, like Ansel Keys and those fellows from Harvard who sold out the health of the planet for how much? $6,500. That's how much they got paid. And we have their records. We have what they got paid. We have their contracts. $6,500 back in the 60s. It's about $55,000 now. So they drove off with a sweet new Camry and we all suffered and died early, right? I mean, that's really it? That's what you sold your soul for? Really? You better hope there's nothing else after this because you would definitely be facing judgment for that. And they should have been facing judgment for that here. People still should be because these food and drug companies are still perpetuating this lie. The Sugar Research Foundation is now the Sugar Association. They have their own records. They know what they did historically. So they know that this is crap. They know that their product is harmful. And they're still pushing this out there. You know, I mean, they're still committing the crime. They're still knowingly putting out a harmful product and trying to blame something else. So I think they're still culpable criminally. You know, I was talking about the Seventh-day Adventists. I know a lot of Seventh-day Adventist churchmen. They're just normal people. They're just nice, normal people. But the system in place is about you should not eat meat. It's sinful. That came from Ellen G. White back in the 1800s with the founding of the church. And her protege was a kid named John Harvey Kellogg, who grew up to be Dr. Kellogg and started Kellogg Cereals with his brother. Very influential man, extremely famous. Anthony Hopkins played him in a movie called Road to Wellville. He was a bit of a nut. He did a lot of very strange things that people can look into. Very, very eccentric in a lot of ways, but extremely famous and extremely influential. And so presidents went to him. Carnegie went to him. Rockefeller went to him. Henry Ford went to him. Very famous people went to him and really held him in high regard. And was probably a very smart guy, but at the same time, he was extremely ideologically conflicted. And so he spent a lot of his time inventing things, and a lot of things we invent were these plant-based meat alternatives and Kellogg cereal. And he talked about this, like, you need to eat a bland plant-based diet to suppress your sexual urges and masturbation. And people would take their kids to him at his sanitarium in Battle Creek, Michigan to help deter them from masturbating because it was just such an evil sin that this happens. Now, Ellen G. White wrote about this in one of her dozens of books that he was the typesetter for. So this was ingrained in his brain because he's just reading all of her books from an early age. And in one of her books, I think it was called A Solemn Appeal to Mothers, she says, if your child masturbates but once, it's like putting a gun to their breast and pulling the trigger. They are dead in that instant. And so they really took this seriously. And he's a 12-year-old boy reading this going like, oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. And this is coming from a prophet of God. Obviously, this is real stuff. And so he was really, really serious about that. And so he would put people on a plant-based diet. He would put people on, you know, Kellogg's cornflakes. And he would also circumcise them. He would circumcise children. He would circumcise boys. And he would circumcise girls. without anesthetic. Right. And he said, because the pain would act as a deterrent for them masturbating, and you leave them in pain, you leave them suffering, and they don't want to touch that area for a few weeks. And when it heals up, they're like, oh, okay, no, I don't want to do that. And, you know, in a boy, you know, it makes it more difficult to masturbate because without a foreskin, there's not as much play. With a girl, I mean, you're removing the sensitive parts of the organ. They remove the clitoris and the labia, right? So, I mean, it was just disgusting what this guy did. He was the one who actually influenced the medical establishment in America, saying that everyone should circumcise their boys for hygiene reasons. That it was much more cleanly and much more hygienic to circumcise people. It's just like, really? Why have we never needed circumcisions? Why don't animals out in the wild need circumcisions? You know, I mean, this is, you know, like if that was causing such a huge burden of disease in nature, it wouldn't have happened. And then, so, you know, they started circumcising people, but the reason was not for cleanliness reasons, not for hygiene reasons. If you just wash yourself, circumcised or uncircumcised, you have the exact same, health risks, exactly the same, as long as you just practice basic hygiene, right? If you never wash yourself under your foreskin, sure, that actually increases your risk of penile cancer by threefold. Fine. That soap, it exists, right? And so, you know, that's not an excuse. And so, but the reason he did it was to deter masturbation. But at the same time, we didn't walk it back. You know, it didn't say like, all right, you know, you figured it out anyway. Just stop circumcising. You don't actually need to do that. That stayed. People still think, I talk about this stuff, just the history of this, that's on the record. People can look this up. You know, they say, no, you circumcise people for cleanliness and hygiene reasons. Like, they're still saying this stuff that he said over a century ago in order to trick people into circumcising their kids. So it's pretty crazy. But obviously, you know, Kellogg's sort of has a life of its own now. They're a multi-billion dollar operation, maybe even, you know, higher than that. And they want to perpetuate themselves now. You know, now they want to make money, whether they have the ideology that Mr. Kellogg's had or not, Dr. Kellogg, I don't know. But the Seventh-day Adventist Church, they haven't stopped yet. You know, they founded like 20 cereal companies themselves, such as Sanitarian Foods, which is the largest cereal manufacturer in Australia. And they make Weet-Bix, those disgusting things, you know, people somehow eat. You know, that's one of their main products. And so they're still going. And now they've always enjoyed tax exempt status. They've actually never, that multinational company has never paid taxes, right? Because it's just a church bake sale after all. They're just selling some cookies, you know? And so now you have the church and their ideology, this warped ideology that somehow the food that we've been eating for the entire existence of humanity is now somehow bad for us. That ideology from the top down, the people, you know, controlling the wheels, that now they have just billions of dollars behind them, right? So now they're just doing what the hell they want to do. But it's not that they've certainly infiltrated different organizations like the WHO, like the government. I mean, the McGovern report, that was 1977, Senator McGovern put out a report saying, it's like, okay, well, we need to think about, you know, what are we eating? What's good or bad? And it's the first time the government ever said like, ooh, maybe we should limit something, as opposed to let's try to get enough of everything. Because before that, we were dealing with nutritional deficiencies and people not getting enough. And now we're like, oh, no, we're having too much. We don't want all this saturated fat, and cholesterol could be bad for you and cause heart disease. So you need to limit that. That report, the McGovern report, was written by a Seventh-day Adventist church member, right? So, you know, it's not like they just had this ideology put out there in the 1800s and then just like left it to bed. No, and it's not like they just started corrupting institutions now. In fact, a lot of the institutions they founded the processed food companies, right, with Kellogg's cereals, and then 36 cereal companies like Post came up out of Battle Creek, Michigan around him due to his influence. And then Sanitarium Foods founded 20 of their own cereal companies. It was all to replace meat with plant-based foods. That's where the most important
Sanitarium Foods.
Sanitarium Foods, yeah. Because the thing is that that's their hospitals. Their medical centers are called sanitariums. So Kellogg's hospital is called the Battle Creek Sanitarium. And so it's sanitarium foods, right? And this is what you can expect to get fed in their sanitarium. So, you know, run if you ever faced with that. And they've got hundreds of institutions around the world. I'm sure they do a lot of very good work with that. I'm not taking that away from them, but this side is really corrupt. And so in fact, you know, they founded a lot of these institutions. So they founded the processed food companies. They founded a lot of the cereal companies. They still run a lot of the cereal companies. I mean, Kellogg's isn't owned by the church, but they have strong ties. They do, you know, work together and things like that. You'll see studies that are paid for by Kellogg's that are peer reviewed and approved by Loma Linda Medical Center, which is the medical center and medical school of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. When I was in California looking at medical schools there back in the 2000s, I looked at Loma Linda and said, oh, what's that? I've never heard of that school before. And there was a reason for it, because as soon as I looked at it, I got a message that popped up on the computer that said, if you're not a member in good standing of the Seventh-day Adventist Church with a letter from your deacon showing that, you're not even allowed to apply for medical school here. And I'm like, okay, whatever. That's what that is. And, you know, so that's the thing. They're part of the peer-reviewed system, right? So that anything that's plant-based and says that meat's bad, absolutely, come right through. So this whole idea that, oh, the literature, there's a study. You know, it's just these people patting each other's back. It's just, you know, just old boys